Mr. Holdsworth, 3-1. Where were you born, please?
Born in Cheshire, Wirral, West Kirby.
Which year was this?
1929.
What did your
father at the time was working as a purser on the Royal Mail line, I think.
Did you go to school in the Wirral?
I went to St. Anselm's College in Birkenhead, and then I was sent off to Belmont Abbey School in Hereford as a boarder. That was between about 1940 to about 1945 or 6.
So you spent the Second World War years in Hereford?
That's right, at school.
Was there any bombing in Hereford?
Very little, but the monks of Belmont Abbey, who were Benedictines, ran a fire brigade of their own, and I remember sometime during the war that at supper a call must have come in, and all the monks were gathered together and had to rush off with their uniforms on down to Hereford, where there'd been an explosion. Whether it had been an ammunition dump that had gone up, or whether or not some bomb had fallen, I don't know. But I can't recall really anything else happening there during the war. Of course, one of the reasons I was sent there was because they reckoned that Hereford would probably be fairly bomb-free, I should think.
Now, can you tell me how you came to be in the army?
At school I was in the Army Cadet Corps, or whatever it was, CCF. And I rose to the dizzy ranks of quartermaster sergeant. And then when I left school, I didn't really know what to do. And I worked in an office for a bit. And then, looking at the Picture Post magazine, I saw a picture of a room at Sandhurst, an officer cadet's room at Sandhurst. And I reckon that looks rather good. So, mistakenly, I went along to the local recruiting office in Liverpool, where I was working, and signed on as a regular soldier in the Royal Artillery, which was a bad move, apparently, because what I should have done was gone along to the officer recruiting section in the Army, or whatever it was in those days, and said I wanted to get to Sandhurst, and gone in that way. But in fact, I signed on as a regular soldier for 5 years with the colours and 7 years with the reserve, and started off army life with the, I think it must have been the Liverpool Regiment or the South Lancaster or South Lancashire Regiment at Formby in Lancashire, doing my basic training for 6 weeks. Then I was sent off to Lark Hill because I signed on as a gunner, and there I entered the 17th Training Regiment, which was known as an OR1 regiment. In other words, it was a potential officer's regiment. Every lad in the regiment was, in theory, a potential officer. So I went there and did about 3 months learning how to fire a 25-pounder. And from that regiment, people were sent up to War Office Selection Board, where they were chosen or not, and I think the percentage of people who actually got commissions from it were about not much more than 10%. And these were all national servicemen, except for chaps like me who signed on. Then, because I was a regular and I was trying to get to Sandhurst and would have to do a regular commissions board, I was sent off with a group of about 30 young chaps who were in the same position as myself, and we went to Rhyl in North Wales, where we learned to drive three-ton and one-ton trucks. It was during that time that I caught pneumonia, probably because I was on guard on some mountainside and the wind got into me. Anyhow, caught pneumonia, sent off to Chester Military Hospital, and after about 4 weeks, got better and was sent to Hereford at the convalescent depot there, which I reckon probably is now the SAS headquarters. And there I convalesced and realised that I was the bottom of the pile and that I had no future in the army unless I got cracking. I was sent from Hereford to a heavy anti-aircraft regiment. This must have been about 1948, I suppose, there as an ordinary gunner. I sat around for a bit wondering what to do, and then I went along to my platoon or troop commander and said, look, I started off as a potential officer, but now I'm a private soldier again, and looks as though I'm going to serve for 5 years as a private soldier unless something happens. And he said, oh, well, you better, I'll look at your papers. And he said, my goodness, yes, you are down as a potential officer. We'd lost the records. And I was sent down to a War Office Selection Board in Surrey, which I passed, and therefore I would next be sent to Officer Cadet School. And in fact, I was sent to Mons Officer Cadet School in Aldershot, and it must have been 1948, I suppose, sometime in 48, where I did 6 weeks basic training as a potential as an officer. But because I was due to get a Sandhurst, when I'd finished my National Service Officer training at Mons, I was put into a holding company in Aldershot, in Mons Barracks, where I was kept for about 3 or 4 months before going to Sandhurst. And I reckon I went to Sandhurst in January 1949. And there I did a year and a half.
Did you feel that the Sandhurst course prepared you adequately for what was to come?
Well, the great cry was that it didn't. And that people would come out of Sandhurst and say, well, if I learned how to do the administration for a divisional attack, because I'd spent time studying sand tables at Sandhurst, and officers from the staff college would have come in and lectured us on the withdrawal or advance. But generally, all to do with major military units, and the platoon training didn't really come into it very much. I suppose that is true, and it is true, in fact, that I don't recall doing a single platoon attack exercise or a section attack exercise during my time at Sandhurst. But I will say this for it. But what it did do was make me come out of Sandhurst with the feeling that I was God Almighty, and that whatever I said to anybody went, and that nobody would question my orders, and also that I in turn would question no orders from my superior officer. So I suppose you could say that that's what Sandhurst did for me anyhow. And that when I got out to Korea, I felt supremely confident that I would be able to, tell my men, or give my men orders, and they would obey them. And that was it. Very unlike some of the stories I heard from American officers in Korea, who found it, they had a great deal of difficulty getting their men to obey them at times.
What happened to you after Sandhurst? You
went after Sandhurst. I was that was in July 1950. I was sent first of all to Hythe in Kent to do a small arms course. That was for 2 months. So that taught me how to fire my Brens and all the rest of it. And then for the next 2 months, from about November to the end of December, I went on a platoon commander's course at the School of Infantry in Warminster, and that's where I learned how to do my sector and platoon attacks, etc., etc.
How did you come to be in the Gloucesters?
Well, at Sandhurst, I played rugby, and I was scrum leader for the Sandhurst team, rugby team. And my company commander at Sandhurst had a friend who was in the Gloucesters who was an instructor at Sandhurst. And this friend of his had been a very keen rugby player himself in the Gloucesters. And before the war, the Gloucesters played a lot of rugby and won the Army Cup. And I think that this chap at Sandhurst might have been either captain of the team there, is it now Brigadier Heidenstam, and one day he came along to me and said, look here, young man, he meant my company commander himself, feel you're better suited for the infantry than the gunners. Now, I have to admit that I didn't work very hard at Sandhurst, especially on the academic side, and they were indicating I was probably not bright enough for the gunners, and I'd do rather better than the infantry. And particularly so because I played lock forward for Sandhurst. And the Gloucesters, being interested in rugby players, thought it was a good idea, so they asked me whether I'd like to join the Gloucesters. I said, okay, having never really heard much about them, etc., etc. So I said, yeah, fine, I'll join the Gloucesters. So I was commissioned into the Gloucesters.
This was sometime in 1950?
Yeah.
And the Korean War had already broken out?
That had started by then, yeah.
What kind of a reception did you get in the regiment?
Well, when I joined, that was in, I know what happened. In about August 1950, I joined the regiment at Colchester, and the battalion was going through its preliminary battle training on the ranges at Colchester. And so me and a fellow called Arthur Peel, who was also a subaltern with me, in the Gloucesters from Sandhurst, the two of us, went to Colchester and introduced ourselves to the regiment, and we stayed with them for about 2 weeks, and then we were sent off on the small arms course and the platoon commander's course. So by the time we'd actually went on those courses, we'd joined the regiment and knew that we were going out to Korea.
Had you been following the Korean War?
No. I knew. I had an idea the Gloucesters were going there. About the time I passed out of Sandhurst, I think we heard the Gloucesters were going there.
How did you feel about going?
No, excited.
Because it was abroad?
Yeah, sure. 20. Big deal.
What was the journey like?
Well, out to Korea. That was something else. In January, about January, 1951, we got on to the Empire Foy, F-O-W-E-Y, that is, troop ship, left Southampton. That was great. First class passage. And there were a number of Gloucester reinforcements on the ship with me. And we didn't do a hell of a lot. We did no training on the ship. All we did was to sit around, have a good time for 6 weeks. And the only job I was given was to take two sorts of seasick tablets down to the lower decks and feed the poor soldiers who were sick with a Bay of Biscay with these tablets. And the idea was to find out which was the most suited to prevent seasickness. That's the only duty I had. So we called in at Suez, Ceylon, Singapore, Hong Kong, and then Kure. I think the ship must have... Where would it have gone to? I can't remember which port it went to in Japan, but I know we went to Kure, where the British had the they had their sort of reinforcement base there.
The voyage sounds a bit of a contrast from what I've heard from the Falklands veterans who were doing intensive training, racing around the deck.
Absolutely
and
nothing. We got on this boat, and I mean, obviously, I was there with this fellow Arthur Peel and subalterns and the young fellows who were going out to different regiments throughout the Far East. Malaysia, Hong Kong, anywhere. I mean, the Empire was still almost in being, wasn't it then? 1949, 50, it was, bits of it were going. Yeah, one of the people on the boat was a fellow called George Baker, who was a subaltern in the Sappers, and he's quite a well-known actor now. He did the Ruth Rendell story. He was the inspector, the bluff policeman.
What impression did Japan make on you?
Well, how long was I in Japan? I couldn't have been in Japan for more than 3 or 4 weeks. All we did was to go out for route marches and do a bit of training under a colonel whose name I've forgotten, but he was quite a wild Irishman who ran the training in this Kirib depot or reinforcement centre. And we did this for a bit and marched around, and we went into Curie Town and saw the Japanese girls smiling and all the rest of it. But I mean, apart from that, we didn't take much notice. And it was, you know, very new to march through the countryside of Japan to see these little villages and that sort of thing. And it was all terribly new. Yeah, pretty exciting.
Did they tell you about what to expect in the Korea?
Yeah, they briefed us about Korea, and of course there had been a number of battles by then. We knew, for example, that the Americans had turned tail and rushed down the peninsula from the Yalu River, and that the Chinese were in hot pursuit. We knew that the Gloucesters had had the odd battle. There was one called Hill 327, which they'd taken and attacked the hill. And by this stage, you know, we were getting ourselves mentally prepared for warfare, I think. Yeah. The other great cry was it was freezing. Apparently it was so cold during the winter of 1950-51, and I suppose it was always cold there, but the one that, for example, the soldiers hadn't been properly dressed for this type of climate, and that the guns themselves, the Bren guns, used to seize up with cold and that sort of thing. And this is the sort of story we'd heard coming back.
Had you now become apprehensive about going?
No more apprehensive. No, I don't think I was. I mean, again, it was the old gung-ho cry of getting out and seeing what it was like.
How did you actually go across?
So a bunch of soldiers, reinforcements to the Gloucesters, were put on a train and we crossed Japan to the port of Sasebo. And we got there. This was an American-run port, Japanese, of course. And we put on a ferry boat and ferried across the sea between Japan and Korea and got to Busan. And there we were put on troop trains and sent up to, I'm not sure which town it was, but it was one of those middle Korean towns, south of Seoul, I should think. Unless it was Seoul itself, I don't know. And we got out, and we were put onto 3-ton trucks, and taken up to battalion headquarters, in somewhere in the middle of Korea. Because the battalion had actually been withdrawn, was out of the line, in rest, after probably the 327 action, which took place in about February of 51, and they were waiting to go back into the line, and I joined them in early March, I suppose, or middle March, when they were in some village in the middle of Korea just resting. Doing a bit of training.
Had Korea turned out to be what you had expected at first sight?
Don't forget, I'd never been to the Far East before, and here were all these very different people, all Oriental, couldn't understand a word of their language, but I found it very intriguing to see all these strange new people. And I remember to my horror now that I hadn't got a knife and fork or something to eat with, and we were living in a Korean house, the sort of small officers' mess consisted of, you know, myself and Lachry Wood, the company commander, and this fellow Dennis Watmore, and Tom Keneally, who was the other officer, and Mike Harvey, who was our second in command. That was our little officers' mess, and I didn't have a knife and fork, so I patrolled the village, which was now deserted, with my revolver in my hand in case some Korean bandit would leap on me. And I remember, to my great embarrassment, walking into some Korean house, and there were several people sitting there. Okay, and I was looking for my knife and fork, holding my revolver in my hand, and these startled people looked up to me, and of course, stupidly, I had forgotten they don't use knives and forks in Korea, but chopsticks, anyhow. So there we were, in this village, and after about 3 weeks, word came that we were moving up to the line.
What was your own role at this time in the regiment, in the battalion?
When I joined, I was made officer commanding 12th platoon, and I had taken over from Captain Mike Harvey, who then became second in command of the company. Now, Mike Harvey was a reservist officer who, during the war, had served as a flat sergeant to the RAF. I'm not sure how he gained a commission into the Gloucesters, but he came out as a reservist, and he must have been about 27, 28 at the time. And that's how I met him, and he became second in command, and I took over to him.
Were they mostly Gloucester men?
No, they were all reservists, to a man almost. They fought in the Second World War, most of them, having been regulars, and of course they had signed on as reservists, little expecting that they would be called up for the Korean War. And it was a great shame. It was absolutely ghastly, really, because they were the sort of men who'd done their bit in the Second World War, established little businesses like my Batman, Private Chitty, who had set up a greengrocery business. And people like him were suddenly plucked out of this and brought out to Korea to fight again, only to be killed and captured, a lot of them.
What was their morale and mood then?
Morale was fairly low, and mood was fairly bolshy. So taking over a platoon of men who were average age, I reckon, anything between 30 and 35, and with quite a lot of war experience, was a bit of a problem. There were stories that they had been pretty bolshy towards Mike Harvey when he'd been in charge of the platoon, and he had quite a lot of prestige, being a black belt judo chap. And so this counted with them quite a lot. And as I pointed out in my article that I'd written for the Gloucester magazine, taking this lot over, about 25 to 30 of them, the age of 20, 21, and trying to instill some sense of respect for myself in them wasn't very easy.
Were there any specific techniques you adopted?
Well, I gave them my speech. My sort of opening speech was on the basis that although they were far more experienced than I was the chap who received the orders, and I had to pass these orders down to them. And if they didn't obey them, they would get into trouble, and perhaps they might get shot. Well, I think they understood this. But, I mean, they treated me actually very well, I think, considering.
What happened when you actually did move up into the line?
Right, well, we got into trucks driven up by American drivers, blacks to the man, I think, almost. And they drove us all up there and dumped us on the road south of the Imjin River. And we walked along the road for a time, and then suddenly somebody said, well, you see that hill up there? That's your hill. And so the company commander and the three platoons walked up that hill, and that was going to be our battle station for the next, goodness know how long it was meant to be. And we got on top of this hill, D Company Hill as we called it, which was a long ridge. And the ridge was aligned north to south, facing the Imjin. In other words, the northern tip of it was facing near the Imjin, and the southern bit was, well, further down. And 11 platoon of D Company was put onto the front bit of the ridge, my platoon, 12 platoon in the middle of the ridge, and 10 platoon at the rear end of the ridge. With company command, with company headquarters, with 10 platoon at the rear end.
What did the terrain look like?
Well, it was all hilly. Hardly, not really, well, it was mountainous insofar that to our right rear, there was a large mountain called Kamaksan, K-A-M-A-K-S-A-N, I can't remember the exact spelling. And this was a very big feature, and I think it was about 600 or 700 meters, so it was a mountain. And that was right behind us, and it was on this mountain, I think, that C Company was put. So we were pretty well spread out, C Company on a mountain, and that must have been jolly nearly a mile away to the right rear. And then D Company was sort of in the middle-ish. And to our right front, there was B Company on a series of small hills, about two or three small hills. And to our left, across the side of the road, and then a road ran through our battalion position, again, north to south, south to north, up to the Imjin River, which was ahead of us, laterally running across our front right there.
How did you feel about the positions that you were given?
The thought that the Chinese would attack those positions seemed to be furthest from people's minds. Anyhow, it was furthest from my mind, being very new. I mean, the first time I'd been in sort of action and didn't realise what could have happened. I have a feeling that the powers that be didn't really think we'd be attacked, because all the only defences we put up round us were trip flares and no wire and no mines around the company positions. All we did was to dig slip trenches where we could into the hillside or onto the top of the hill. So in other words, we weren't fully prepared. And then what we did was we got onto this hill, dug these slip trenches in, and all the usual things, but didn't get any further than that.
Why had you not thought that the Chinese might attack?
Well, I mean, I didn't know whether they would or not, but I had no idea, being so new to it, but we didn't appear to be fully prepared for a Chinese, for an attack. And when we say Chinese, we always talked about Chinese attacking because we, although the North Korean armies had done the initial attacks, as far as we could make out at the time, the Chinese army was in preponderance in that sector anyhow. And that if anybody was going to attack, it was going to be the Chinese. Although the North Korean army must have been there too. But what I'm saying is because we put no mines down and no wire around the positions, it didn't seem to me that we were in any particular danger.
What do you remember happening next?